Hi, everyone. Before we get into today's episode, I want to quickly shout out two books you should check out on Amazon. The first one is written by today's guest, Dr. Benjamin Ritter, and is titled Becoming Fearless. Ben was kind enough to send me this book for review, and you'll hear a little more about that in today's episode. The second book is titled Four Truths and a Lie, and is authored by Terry Tucker, our guest from episode 8 of this podcast. Terry's book launches today, September 12th, and in part of his first push, we'll be offering a free download of the book for 48 hours until September 13th at midnight as a Kindle ebook. He's aiming for 100 downloads and 75 reviews on Amazon in the first 72 hours, so if you're interested, consider helping out a past guest. Check out the episode description for links of both of these books. First, Becoming Fearless by Dr. Benjamin Ritter, and second, Four Truths and a Lie by Terry Tucker. Thanks for listening, and let's get into today's episode. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to For the Curious and Confused, a podcast for people who want to understand different perspectives of the world through the people who inhabit it. I'm your host, Dom McTaggart, and today I'm joined by Dr. Benjamin Ritter. Ben is an executive coach, organizational leadership expert, speaker, and author. With more than a decade coaching and development experience, he has supported leaders at Google, Amazon, Coursera, DoorDash, Northwestern, and many others. He's recently published a book titled Becoming Fearless, where he provides a digestible perspective to developing courage and overcoming fear. The book's framework encompasses all aspects of life, from mindset and purpose to personal relationships to leadership and practical career strategies. Much of this is informed by his PhD in organizational leadership. I reviewed Ben's book and can say that it's a great one to have close by for concise and concrete insights into contending with our fears. I'm especially excited to get into how this overlaps with stepping into leadership. So thanks so much for sharing your time with us today, Ben.
I'm excited to be here. And so thanks for having me.
Definitely. So to start us off, could you give us a bit of a quick 2-minute introduction into who Dr. Benjamin Ritter is and what motivates him?
Yes. So who am I? I'm a person who believes that living for yourself should be your main value. And then whatever that means for you, as long as it doesn't impose on other people's way of life. I care very deeply about health. It's mental, physical, spiritual, basically every aspect. And you can see that with how I live my life and how I wake up and my morning routine to what I value, what I input, what I surround myself with. And also believe in adventure and openness and honesty. I believe that willpower doesn't really exist, but commitment does, and that everything that we do in our life just kind of depends on our own choices. And if we're making a choice, and we have to take ownership and responsibility for that. So I feel that we are empowered and accountable to create the life that matters to us, all kind of defined by the words of self-leadership. And I have to admit, when you asked me to give a short introduction, I wanted to tell you what I do for a living. And I stopped myself to lean into who am I? And I think we all need to do a little bit more of that in our lives and define ourselves not by a job, which is temporary, or a relationship, which also might be temporary, but more so to focus on our foundations and our values. And when I work with my clients, no matter what their goals are, that's what we try to find out first. You know, who are you? Because if you can figure out who you are, and that's going to create a pretty strong sense of confidence and resilience, that's going to help you take the actions you need to actually create the life and the career that you want. And that's where I hang out. Basically work with executive leaders or people that are trying to grow within their career, and I help them reach their goals, you know, once they define what those are.
I really appreciate the comments on sort of stopping yourself from immediately saying what your role is and what you do, because I do agree that this sort of is like the default question for whenever you meet any new person. It's just, what do you do? And then that kind of sort of puts you in a little bit of a box right at the beginning. So I really like that. Also, what is your morning routine that you mentioned that helps you kind of stay on track with what your goals are?
So I wake up and I fill up my water cup at the moment, whatever it is. I load it with my trace minerals, and my little list for the morning is zinc, iodine, vitamin D3, K2, and electrolytes, and then I pop on my red light and do a couple minutes with my back facing it. And when my back's facing it, I can read. So I open up a section of a book. There's like seven principles, and each day is a different principle, mainly related to being, connected with the world and being, letting go of ego, like just kind of some reflection. That's a good way to kind of set the intention for the day that I resonate with. I think people are going to find different readings or pages that they might resonate with. Then I turn the other way and put my dark glasses on. Can't read anymore. And maybe one day with Google Glass I could. And then I set my just kind of like repeat the visions that I feel are important, or reflect on a question that I feel is important for the day. All this is like 7 minutes. It's not that long. Once I'm done with that, you do your normal, maybe morning functions. And if I need to knock out something for a client that asked me overnight, I will. But then I go to the gym, spend about an hour, hour and a half at the gym, flex. Stability, strength training, or I'll run, some sort of fitness. So that was kind of like the mental, the physical, the spiritual, mental aspects of health. And then I come back and get into the workday.
Awesome. So if you were to divide your life in different chapters, which do you feel like have been the most impactful in how you approach life?
Well, all of us. The most impactful, if we like it or not, is probably the one we don't remember, and that's our youth when we were children, and because that set the foundation of your values, how you receive money, relationships, how you think about work. So I have to give it that some credit, even though I don't really know how it directly impacted me today, but it set the foundation. Now everything else I kind of had to adjust because maybe it wasn't serving me the best way. Like for example, when I was in playing professional, well, semi-professional, but then college soccer, and when I lost that, there was kind of two chapters there. There's a chapter of when I was playing, so the resilience, the hard work, the desire to achieve, the false purpose, which I thought was to become a professional athlete. And the lack of confidence that was derived from trying to strive for external validation. How'd I do? What'd my coach think? Succeed, like really trying to, basing my sense of self on an external goal that wasn't within my control. That led to me doubting myself, not really knowing who I was or believing that I was capable or confident, which impacted my ability to play, impacted my relationships. In a variety of ways. But like the awareness that that was happening led me down the path of personal development, which then led me to where I am today. So kind of the next chapter when soccer did not work out and I had to decide who I was, led me down the path of discovery. And before actual like discovery, there was a component of, wow, I don't believe in myself. I don't feel that I'm socially capable of like man managing and establishing relationships because I spent so many years distancing myself from other people to focus on a sport. And so before I actually figured out who I was, I said, F it, let's go explore life and let's build up confidence. And if I was to do it over, I actually think you should try to create clarity before just trying to develop confidence. I think they feed each other. But at that stage in my life, I just said, I'm at my lowest point. I don't think I can lose any more, anything else. I failed in a way I never thought I would fail. Everything I thought about life and purpose and work isn't true. Well, might as well just go try everything. And it was like 4 or 5 years of my life which had a sense of fearlessness, hence becoming fearless, of putting myself in situations that helped me really instill the beliefs that failure is progress. There really is nothing to be worried about. To believe in yourself that you can withstand and survive basically everything if you choose to. And that was a beautiful, incredible time of my life, that chapter that instilled that sense of fearlessness and resilience. Because then, even Then I got to a point where I was like, oh wow, okay, I've tasted lots of things, but I feel completely lost and meaningless. And what do I actually want to invest my time and energy into? And so then I went back to clarity to define, like, who am I? What do I care about? What does that mean for the goals that I want to strive for? So that was another chapter. And I'd say that now is another chapter. I moved to Austin, Texas about over a little over 5 years ago. I have been in this field, this space of talent, executive coaching, and leadership, and have been able to focus solely, right, on one main thing that I care about and build this brand and build this business and create that impact in the world. And this chapter, right, we're still writing it, and we'll see where it goes.
Thank you. Those sound like really interesting ones. I also grew up playing soccer, and I have not gotten anywhere close to semi-professional or college, but I just recently joined a new team where I think my personality is smaller than those of the other teammates, and I think I also am having some feelings of external validation with that, and so I resonate with that. Also, I'm curious about for the period of transitioning from that point of feeling like you were failing, I'm guessing that is particularly around the soccer aspect, and then moving into the I'm going to just do stuff to become fearless. How did you make that transition from feeling afraid of not being able to make that, of not being able to meet that external goal or meet that external validation, to then say, I'm going to just ignore that and do things even if they are scary, if that's a way to paraphrase it?
Yeah, well, at that point, I dedicated every waking moment to becoming better at a sport, which in reflection is kind of silly. But I think we do that with a lot of things. People dedicate their time to relationships, to family, to work, and to research because they believe it's important. And it's not right or wrong, it's just a choice. But in reflection, that choice was a little off balance because when I lost that, when I lost soccer, after a variety of events, I realized that there were a lot of gaps in me. I wasn't really socially astute because I pushed people away to focus on the sport. I didn't have any other interests because all I did was, like, I was a little obsessed. All I did was play soccer and work out. And also, the major that I thought might be interesting if soccer didn't work out, nutrition, was canceled a couple of years down the line. So the thing I also thought I wanted to do was gone. And so I didn't feel that I was socially capable. I didn't believe in myself or have any sort of confidence. I didn't know what I wanted to do for a career. So I kind of had a blank slate. And I did have one thing going for me, though, and that was that I knew how to dedicate my time and energy and my effort into a specific topic. And I just kind of had a little, the pain of not having those aspects of myself defined. Now that I didn't have soccer, because soccer was the source of, like, if I'm doing soccer, I'm doing things right. That was gone. I had to figure out, well, then what do I need to do things right? And the answer was, how do I become confident? And if you look up online at the time and just pop it into Google, like, this is literally what I did. I remember sitting in my dorm room doing this. How do I become confident? You end up getting a variety of topics, from dating to selling to building a business to just self-esteem, personal development. And so I had I had multiple industries to go dedicate my time and energy into, and that's what I chose to do. You know, if I'm not, and like, how did I make that switch? I don't think I had a choice. It was either be severely depressed and don't have any friends and don't know what you want to do for a living, which was not my personality. Like, my personality to get to where I was involved hard work, resilience, intention. Like for soccer, I only got into food and nutrition and weightlifting because I said, well, how, if I can only practice so many hours a day, Well, how can I get better? Oh, I can eat a certain way. I can train a certain way. Strangely enough, the mental part of the game wasn't as prominent then, so I kind of wish if it was, I don't know what would be different because that came up at the end of my path. But so I knew how to solve problems when I realized that there was a problem. And so I took that time, energy, and invested into that. And when you already have felt like you've lost everything, there isn't much to be afraid of anymore. And also when you choose to define something as a problem to be solved, or when you put on the student hat, like for example, with school, when you decide to go get a doctorate in a topic, you are deciding to say that I don't know this thing, I'm going to go learn this thing. So it's okay to ask a silly question in class because you're actually seeking answers. You know that you're not an expert. Too many people in life, they have this fear of asking a stupid question because they haven't decided that they're learning. And so at that point in time, I knew I had a problem. I admittedly told everyone I had a problem. And I put on my student cap and I went, well, I'm going to go explore life to see what I can learn. And by default, learning involves getting things wrong and reassessing, though, and then trying something new. And so the fear was already gone because I already lost everything, and then that allowed me to switch my mindset to from person thinking that they were already successful to person knowing that they weren't successful and needing to learn.
I read like I forget who says this quote, but something about the man who is afraid to ask a question. No, what is it? The who doesn't ask a question in a moment, who asks the question is a fool for a moment, and then who doesn't ask a question is a fool for life. And so yeah, like the willingness to admit ignorance for the moment in the purpose of or in service of learning is, I think, yeah, also very much related to fear and confidence in some way. One other thing to investigate a little bit further, you mentioned a period of building the confidence and then the period of following that of determining what you want to do. And I think those can sometimes feel like they belong together, but I think I'm also starting to realize that they are sort of separate. So can you maybe talk a little about how it felt different to build confidence and then how that next section was about discovering the actual path to take once that confidence was built.
I know I said earlier that, like, oftentimes you work on clarity first and then create confidence. And I actually might want to take that back or at least put them in conjunction with each other. Because if you are confident, and that when I say confident, meaning free to explore, free to get curious, free to bounce around without the expectation of being right, of the belief that you're going to be okay no matter what. Like, one of the things that's important about my background is I've done so many different odd jobs, from handing out flyers on street corners to being a live cast model for mannequins in a Civil War museum to a production assistant in music festivals to an actor to a bartender to doorman. A variety of, in place of all the other businesses or professional jobs that I've had. And those experiences allowed me to build a sense of security around my ability to make money, which I think is really important for a lot of people I work with in the career space. Because if you know, no matter what, like push comes to shove, that you can put food on the table, a roof over your head, you can do a lot of things. Or if you know that you have the social skills to have a conversation with a stranger, to maybe meet somebody new, to build relationships, to have a friendship, like you're gonna have a sense of just resilience and confidence in yourself that is going to help you succeed. So if you're not afraid of losing your job, then you're gonna show up in a really different way. If you're not afraid of putting food on the table, you're going to show up in a really different way. If you're not afraid that you're going to be able to get into another relationship, you're going to show up in a very different way. Generally a lot more authentically. You're willing to take more risks. So I went on a little bit of a a speech there. I know your question related to kind of the journey between confidence and then kind of finding clarity. When I got to a point where I felt like I explored enough, I kind of thought that would be enough because I had a very negative belief around finding your purpose, like that quote, that slogan. Actually, the first ever talk I gave for my business was the worst advice I ever received was find your purpose. And that was because it doesn't come with an instruction manual. And so I took that idea of find your purpose and I became obsessed. And I didn't realize that a purpose can never be greater than you because you create it. So you really can't treat it as if it's more important than you or your life, like holistically. It's just a component of your life. It's a tool to create meaning and dopamine and maybe some money, maybe relationships, and help you explore what this world is that we live in. So at the point where I was incredibly confident, I still didn't know what I wanted to actually do. And it was this battle between, well, how much do I invest of myself into this thing that I want to do? Like, how do I actually define it now that I'm ready to explore it in a healthy way? And so then I started really trying to understand, like, where's the overlap of my interests, my passion, the things I want to learn later on in life, maybe the career that I think I want to create, the people that I want to engage with. And then what am I just good at? And that intersection all understand it helped me kind of start paving the path towards the, well, okay, so now that I've done this, what is it that I want to invest this in to then start building that path towards me, the career that I'm in today?
Yeah, I think that's I've heard that in a Japanese framework, I think ikigai, of what you're passionate about, what you're good at, what the world needs, and what you can be paid for. And the nexus of all that is a component of the purpose. So yeah, thanks for expanding on that a little bit. So to, I think, zoom back out and think a little more how all of that is incorporating into what you do now, what are some of the challenges that you're trying to help people address with what your work is?
So there's the goals that people have for, like, I want to get a new job, or I want to get promoted, or I want to be a better leader. So those are just some tactical goals. But underlying it all is I need to figure out what I want to do and how to get there. I want to believe that I can be successful, I can get out of my own way and be confident. I can develop the skills I need to achieve my goals, and I'm able to create an environment around myself that helps all that happen. So the clarity, the confidence, and the control underlines often any goal that we have. Because if we are stuck in our life, it's often because we don't actually know what we care about. We don't know a way to get there, like to make it happen. We don't believe in ourselves enough. We don't believe that we're capable of doing it or don't have the skills to do it. And we haven't created an environment that is going to serve us to get there. It's often, if you're stuck in your life, take a look at those three pillars, clarity, confidence, and control, and ask yourself, where am I being held back? And when you figure it out, that's where you just kind of double down and focus in that pillar until all of a sudden now, you're creating an environment that it allows you to be intentional and be successful towards your goals.
I like those three pillars: clarity, confidence, and control. Yeah. So within that, how do you decide on your book of the Becoming Fearless, of that being the framework for how to address this and communicate these themes to people?
You can really accomplish anything in your life if you decide that you're going to be fearless. Like when it really comes down to it, just very simply, if you are fearless, you're willing to try things and you're willing to experience. And if you try things, you're going to learn and you're going to iterate and adapt and try new things. And you're going to be able to create the life that you want. I think it's the simplest expression of living for yourself and leading yourself towards your goals. Now, if you don't have awareness of what you want to achieve, then you might still end up being lost and stuck. But fearlessness, just like confidence, is just a game changer. Every single person I work with is stuck because they're getting in their own way towards what they actually want to achieve. Because even if you don't know what you want to achieve, even if you don't have clarity, if you try enough things, you're eventually going to learn enough about yourself that you're going to end up finding where you need to hang out. The book Becoming Fearless was born because I started, like, with this concept in mind, started creating content on a weekly basis. It's still out there. It's Fearless Fridays. First started posting it on LinkedIn, then started posting it on my podcast, and I got a lot of comments. People reaching out saying that really resonated. Wow, these 2 3 minutes of this 2 3 minute tip helped me take action. And I learn through little snippets. Like, give me a good quote, and I'm going to go do something with it. And then I'm going to reflect on what happened when I did that thing. And then I'm going to try something new. And then I'm going to reflect again and just continuously iterate and learn. Experiential learning, right? That's like, it's a whole aspect of applied learning theory, is like how we actually change our behavior and change our lives is through action, and then reflection, and then action, and then reflection. And there've been a couple like negative responses about the book, because it's not a 300 400 page essay on how to become fearless in your life. Well, that's because I don't think you need that. It is 65 strategies, which is also kind of this weekly content that ended up becoming the book, to help people actually do something different in their life, to create change and to become fearless. It's hard to think and then become fearless. It's very difficult to change a belief. I'm going to think hard enough and then I'm going to become fearless about this thing. No, you have to think, and then you have to do the one thing that's just uncomfortable enough to show you that there's nothing to be afraid of. It's very difficult to become fearless without action, and that book just tries to truly motivate action.
Yeah, the behavior shapes the thoughts more than the thoughts shaping the behavior a lot of times. Yeah, I was also curious about the what perspectives you had on choosing to make them or to structure the book as these 1 and 2 page things that can be independent of themselves, compared to, as you said, like a 300, 400 page drawn out essay that kind of builds very slowly, and then kind of brings themes in. So do you feel like that the necessity of that, or the choice of that, was influenced by how social media is kind of impacting our lives currently? Or was that, how LinkedIn do you feel like that is with kind of how information is disseminated nowadays?
Yeah, so what's missing from the story is, back in 2011, when I was growing and learning and reached like a pinnacle of my own growth, I had a booklet and I had little reminders in it. And that book helped me remember the things I wanted to do and practice. I would journal, I would like read the thing, go do the thing, come back, reflect on the thing, and adjust the quote as needed. And I grew, I changed, I transformed, because I'd get these little epiphanies that would reframe my perspective on life and relationships. Like, for example, oh, be proud of your work. It was like this epiphany to say, oh, I'm responsible for how I feel each and every single day at my job. And if I'm choosing not to be proud of how I show up, I'm choosing to not be proud of myself. And it is this cycle, this negative cycle, that is going to create greater levels of dissatisfaction and disengagement. And so that just one-liner changed my life. But that one-liner was a culmination of experiences and trials and reading and all those types of things. And like, well, we don't need all that other stuff. We just need the epiphany and the belief. And then we need to go test that epiphany and that thing out. And so when I was back in 2011, 2012, had this little book, I turned that book into another book for men. It was on dating and relationships, that because I was so tired of having 20 books trying to find the one or two things that I wanted to remember, that I just wanted to have this as a pocketbook. Put it in your pocket, pull it out, flip through the page that you need to remember, have it resonate, be an anchor, an affirmation, and go do the thing. And so that's actually how I've learned over the years, how I've transformed. And that's why I wrote the book that way, because it's how I learn and how I've transformed. And we get stuck in content. We get so stuck. We get stuck in inaction. The book is hopefully going to motivate people to be unstuck and to go actually do something. That was the whole purpose and the goal. It's not about not having an attention span or kind of wanting this like next dopamine hit. It was because it was trying to play towards what we really need to change our life. Like, I don't need to give you 200 pages about speaking up in a meeting. Like, you actually have to go share your ideas and raise your hand and engage. And if you feel that you've been dismissed before for sharing an idea, that's a limiting belief that's holding you back from getting promoted. So what do you need to do? Engage in a meeting, which is what one of the strategies is. Or if you want to get promoted, go talk to your boss 6 months before that promotion and lean into them as a mentor. Like, these are easy actions. Like, they're simple to understand, maybe not easy to do, but the book is not going to give you all this. It's not going to give you 200 pages to make you feel good that you've read the thing. It's going to give you one page to hopefully create some sort of action to go do the thing.
Yeah, that reminds me to briefly bring up soccer again. It reminds me of a coach or a quote that my coach would say, was that the soccer is a simple game, but it's not an easy game. And so I feel like that kind of applies here a little bit, of that you can get all the context you need with a long book to set everything up and deliver the final quote. But that final quote, even if it's simple, its execution is a very intentional and sometimes difficult process. So, what do you feel like people misunderstand about fear?
I mean, I think they misunderstand. I'm going to broaden it about emotions. Fear is an emotion. And so I'm broadening this so it maybe is even more valuable to the audience. People take fear as truth. People take emotions as truth. I feel this thing. I label that thing with my thoughts. I then define that thing further with my thoughts. It might not be true, but and then I act based on that label. So fear, I feel fear. I label it as, well, I fear basically what you're feeling. I feel my heart rate increase. I feel sweat. I feel tension in my gut. I feel discomfort, whatever you want to include in that. I then label it as fear. You can label it as a bunch of other things, but then I label that as fear. Because I labeled it as fear, I now think further that this is something to avoid, something not to do, something I have to be aware of. And then I change my behavior and my action because of that. The biggest misunderstanding, or hopefully the reframe we can create, is fear is information. We ultimately get to choose how to use that information. Just like an emotion is information, we ultimately get to choose how we use that information. Information is not by default true. So just because you feel something doesn't mean that that is true. It means that you are labeling it a certain way based on your experiences, based on your limiting beliefs, based on society, based on the people around you. Now, if that information doesn't serve the goals that you're trying to achieve, then we have the right to dismiss that information or reinterpret it in a way that serves us. So, for example, you see, I mean, see this with skydivers. I feel fear. And I'm using skydiving because I was in a plane the other day watching my friend jump out of it. I feel fear that I'm going up in this plane, that I'm going to be jumping out of this plane. I'm going to reinterpret that fear as excitement, and then going to use that excitement and adrenaline as motivation to jump out of this plane. It's just a reinterpretation of a feeling. Oftentimes, though, when we are in our lives and we feel fear, instead of reinterpreting it or reframing it, we accept it. So, no, I'm not going to go talk to that person that I find attractive. No, I'm not going to apply to that job because what if I get rejected? No, I'm not going to go to that networking event and approach somebody new because I don't know what I'm going to say. Or if I do say something, I don't want that to reflect poorly on me. There's no, I'm not going to, call my estranged sister because what if she doesn't pick up or is angry at me? I don't know. There's all these things that we We basically tell ourselves stories that aren't real. And that's the greatest misunderstanding around fear.
My advisor said almost that exact same thing to me, actually several times at this point about like nerves for public speaking and like giving presentations and things of that the circuits that are activated for fear are the same circuits that are activated for excitement and engagement and adrenaline. And yeah, that reframing definitely takes some practice, but I resonate with that. So how in that case do we be able to recognize when fear is legitimately keeping us safe compared to fear that is preventing us from reaching our full potential?
Well, unless there's a lion in front of you, it's gonna
Let's
eat you
limit
or
it to
something.
things where
Yeah.
the actual
Well, it's
physical well-being might not be at risk.
yeah. The it's the question is this going to get in the way of me achieving the life that I want? You can throw in too, is this against my values or aligned with my values? Really, it's goal achievement. So does the thing in front of me potentially impede that I'm going to achieve my goals? Then another question, is that true? What evidence do I have based on that? Because sometimes someone might respond to that. If I say the wrong thing, like in a meeting, then I'm going to be seen as not capable at my job, and then I'm going to lose that job. Unless the goal is getting a promotion or the goal is keeping a position. But that may not be true, because actually sharing your ideas, right or wrong, is going to create great engagement. It's going to help you build relationships, and then going to help you get more information, then help you build a further career. So that's why it's sometimes important to have a coach or a mentor, because sometimes when you respond to the fear, is this going to serve my goals? Your limiting beliefs might get in the way of actually getting to the truth. So it does take some analysis from yourself, but sometimes our analysis isn't always right. Hopefully it is, but if you're finding that you can't take the actions that you want to take based on your analysis of the situation, then maybe your analysis isn't correct. And that's when we get alternative perspectives.
Before we shift into leadership, I have one last question about how your personal collection of fears has shifted from, I guess, particularly with now that we have some context of how important soccer was to you earlier, I guess, how that fear landscape has shifted from then to if or how you experience fear now.
Yeah, fear is just like, I don't even know how to explain it. Fear is literally just information. Before, fear was a reason to avoid something. It was an indication of who I was. It was a sign of maybe a It was strong. It was a very strong belief that I wasn't good enough. Now, fear is just a little voice that sometimes goes off. And I can interpret it if I want, but really now in my life, it just is a whisper. And it's actually a sign, instead of listening to it, to counter it. People that maybe have a lack of confidence might resonate with this. It's if you're thinking to yourself, "Oh, that was stupid. I shouldn't have done that." You need to be louder internally, or even externally, to say, "No, that was great. Good job. That was a good try. You learned something. Let's do this again." It becomes a dialogue, where before fear itself was just it was the mixtape, just the thing that kept playing. And very different now in my life. It is a small part of you that never goes away. It might minimize, but it's just one voice of many.
And you can choose, or I guess you have more confidence in choosing which ones to listen to an extent.
Well, I think there's a commitment to only listen to the voice that is going to serve you, that's going to benefit you. There's no reason for me to listen to a negative voice. There's no reason for me to sit and, like, if you are feeling any, some people might say if you are feeling shame or resent or regret or lack of confidence, to it's an emotion or it's a lesson that maybe you need to reflect on to learn again. But when it comes to fear, again, if you're not in any sort of bodily harm, if it's going, if the thing you're trying to do is going to serve your goals, what you're trying to achieve, it's never right. Like it's, and that's, you have to be louder than it, and you have to practice being louder than it, and you have to scream at the top of your lungs the thing that you want to believe instead, and you have to write it down, you have to think it, you have to visualize it, you have to surround yourself with people that are also going to promote it. Because you can change those programming. You can end up taking the microphone away from that voice, so it is just a whisper, but it takes a lot of time and energy and effort. And then if instead you focus on the thing, like, don't think about an elephant, you're thinking about the elephant. If instead all you do is focus on the negative and that fear, and that's what you're going to believe, and that's what's going to be louder.
So I'm sure this is all also very wrapped up in how people approach leadership in general. Before we get into that overlap, could you first say what you feel like are the most important characteristics of a good leader?
Always preface this with the fact that there are leaders that might not be quote unquote good leaders that are very successful leaders, that are CEOs of major companies. So what I'm going to be sharing is what I perceive as a best practice based on research in regards to job satisfaction and engagement on average. But there are very, what some people might say, toxic cultures that people love to work in. And that different styles of leadership are successful in. So I have to preface that. Because people are like, well, there's right and wrong. And I go, well, there isn't. There's not. There's very successful companies that have leaders and cultures that are not, that do not align with this. So with that being said, successful leaders tend to empower their team, to curate an environment that aligns with their strengths and their interests, share the vision of their company to align everyone on where they're going and why they're going there. Oftentimes, really leverage all types of communication from positive to constructive feedback to curiosity, and really lean into openness and honesty with their team. And don't just assume that people know what to do, but truly set appropriate expectations while holding their team and themselves accountable. And are visible and are present, and oftentimes are also experts in their field to build high levels of reliability and credibility.
So what are some of the blind spots that people who are trying to be good leaders might experience or fall into? Because I'm sure
That
there's a
people
lot of
know
good
what a,
intention out there, but the actual execution sometimes can be.
two big ones. People know what I want. People know how to do the thing. People don't need feedback. And I know the answers. So the other side of that is curiosity. I don't know the answer. I don't know what really happened. Ask three more questions. Always ask three more questions. Break things down, really define your expectations in a language that the person's going to understand, and don't assume understanding. Ask for understanding, so ask them to teach it back to you. And overly communicate your vision so that people understand where you're going and why you're going there. So, tends to be some of the things I see missed the most.
That people typically don't over communicate when they what the vision
Yeah,
is, they should be doing that.
don't over communicate, don't ask for feedback, don't give feedback, don't ask enough questions, assume understanding. Don't, I mean, don't hold people accountable. Don't have set metrics and objectives of what people are working towards. A lot of stuff that you think would be kind of commonplace, but are missing from most major, from most corporations or leadership styles.
So are you, when you're approached by clients who, or potential clients who I'm guessing mostly are in the executive region and trying to get help with leadership, are there, have you ever had to deny a client or say like this, our framework isn't working, or this, the goals of what I'm trying to bring to you and where you're coming from just are too misaligned? Has it ever
I'm
happened with
just,
you?
yeah, I'm just not a super let's make a lot more money coach. Like I'm not the guy that's gonna come in and help you. We're not building businesses, you know, we're building people. So there are a couple people that I'll turn away that are very much like, I just want to make a bunch more money. I go, great, that's awesome. There are other coaches for you, it's not me.
And also, what are your thoughts on the idea that sometimes the most capable leaders are the ones who aren't seeking leadership?
Well, everyone's a leader. You know, they don't need direct reports to be a leader. Leader just means you have followers. You can be inspirational, you can be visionary, you can give feedback. You don't need to actually have direct reports for that. It is very interesting that the really powerful leaders tend to have a high level of self-awareness, and that self-awareness sometimes lead to self-doubt, and so they just want, or just a growth mindset. So, you know, coaching is not a negative thing. Coaching is a is an opportunity to grow and learn, just like you would go get a degree at a university. So, when it comes to personal and professional growth, oftentimes the people that are seeking it are not because they lack something; it's because they want to be even better.
What is the your favorite and least favorite part of your job?
My favorite is that I can work from anywhere. The least favorite is that I have to be in a quiet, non-distracted place. I actually really also love just being creative. And so what's beautiful about owning my own business is I get to like create graphics and content and like that kind of stuff. And that's just not the bulk of what I do. So at some time in my life, you know, I might do a little bit more handy kind of stuff. Use the innovative, creative part of my brain. But I truly do love helping people grow within themselves. And that requires, you know, a quiet space where I can talk to them and is question heavy in my mindset. And so I feed the creative aspect of myself through other ways.
I think I'm not quite understanding the why that feels like the least favorite part is that you don't enjoy the quiet
Yeah,
spaces as much.
I'm a mover, I'm a shaker. If I could take calls walking down the street, I would. I can't go really work at a co-working space because I need to sit in a phone booth all day. Like I'm where people can go work from anywhere. I can technically work from anywhere, but only if I have such an environment that is not distracting. So it's limiting because I just have to be very, very completely focused without background noise. Where other people can pop up their computer and work on a spreadsheet or take a group meeting in a coffee shop. You can't do that when you're working with clients, or at least I choose not to.
Yeah, it almost feels similar to like the setting of a therapy session almost. Not that they're entirely comparable, but similar types of emotional mental energy needs to be focused in that way.
Your therapist is probably not going to be at a ball game taking a phone call, you know?
More than likely, yeah, I think that's probably fair to say that. Okay, one or two more questions for you here. I know you're not in the AI space necessarily, but I'm always curious to see what perspectives different people have on AI. So, what do you think are the most important ways that AI will impact society?
This is one of those things that is just so, I think, unpredictable at the moment. We're currently using it as just like a really good library and a really good like assistant. And both of those things are really great. We're also using it to integrate and to connect technologies. reduce the, it's also like a really big calculator. It's so funny. I was recently at a far off remote place and I needed to get an answer. I know we had Starlink and we didn't know how to connect, like what setting these batteries needed to be at to run this generator. I took a picture, I asked ChatGPT and they gave me the answer. Like it's an expert in your pocket. What is that going to mean for our society? I don't know. I don't know. If where questions have answers, where I think honestly, it becomes more important for actors, for people to do. As I've talked about, the book needs action to change. We're gonna see probably a bigger gap between people that can leverage AI to act and people that can maybe that are leveraging AI just to, I don't know, to chat. Didn't really give an answer. I don't really know how it's going to evolve. You know, the future is that we all have little robots doing all the work for us, and maybe we're all living off of like universal basic income, and work just disappears, and I don't have to work, and you don't have to work, and we're having a tiki, you know, cocktail or something on a beach. But I don't know where we're going. Please use it if you haven't used it yet. Use it, throw it on your resume, leverage it at work. And the people that are learn how to use AI to speed up their productivity, or their output are going to just, you're going to increase the gap between the other people that you're working with. And it's a tool. And just like any tool, the people that, the people that can leverage it, right? Just like, I mean, just like people who can make PowerPoint slides, you know, you're gonna get selected for those jobs. So put it into your learning stream.
What have been the most useful ways that you've found AI to help you in your business?
It still gets things really wrong, without some direction. So it's a very good helper when you give it the right inputs. Personally, I've used it for everything from building, like, how do I use these supplements to a financial manager and assistant, for my business content development, finding threads and themes and different things, deep research to help me understand somebody prior to having a conversation with them. I try to get clients to kind of help them to build their own kind of profile, to have their own little pocket coach. Not again, not always right, but nice to have. And again, like it's still not that great at creating prompts. It's good at sparking ideas, but you really have to be the one to curate it to create some value.
Well, thank you
And
for
it
those. For...
kind of isn't. It kind of makes up stuff too, so you just be a little careful.
It's definitely it's come a very long way, but yeah, there are definitely still a lot of things that it's not quite there with yet. Yeah, this has been great. Ben, really appreciate your time. I think one last question for you before we end up here is, what is a piece of advice that is important to you that you could leave us with?
Actually, in a pull this up. I was on a run today with a friend and he's asking questions about learning. Because I always am surprised that someone wants to achieve something but they haven't invested time in learning it. I'm oftentimes the first resource that people come to for learning how to become a better leader or to create something in their career. And I'm boggled because we have YouTube, we have books, we have articles, we have ChatGPT, we have I should not be the first person that people come to. I should be the person that people come to when they can't create change on their own. So like door number one is I can learn. So the belief in the, well, actually door number one was awareness. So we were talking about like different doors of learning and growing and stuff. Like door number one is awareness. I know that I have a problem. Okay, you know you have a problem. That's step one. Step two is I can learn about this problem. So you actually take action to go learn. And a lot of people do not go through this door. They stop at awareness. And so we have to believe that we're capable of learning. After we learn the thing from somebody without trying to change it, it's like I do the recipe before I try to change the recipe. And so if you're going to cook something, cook it in the way that someone has cooked it before. Then after you have done that, say, oh, well, what do I like about this? What I don't like about this? And then you can adapt. So then you adapt that learning to your life and your goals and who you are and what you would prefer. And then after you do that, if you can stop. But oftentimes we teach. So if you teach, then you learn again, you learn more. And then after you teach, you can start questioning, okay, so what did I now learn that's new about the thing that I learned initially? And so you start the process again. And most people, again, get stuck at awareness. So if you're at awareness, create some accountability and go learn something. If you've already learned something, now ask yourself, how can I adapt it more to my life? If you've adapted it, now how can you go teach? And if you've taught, it's time to do it all over again.
I like the teach aspect. Yeah, I feel like the first three seem like relatively straightforward, and maybe a general person could string that together. But the teaching part feels very, like a very important reinforcement step in that.
We all can be teachers. Someone needs to learn.
Indeed. Well, Ben, thank you so much for your time today. Again, Ben's book, Becoming Fearless, is on Amazon. I'll put some links in the description for that. But thank you so much for your time today and telling us about your thoughts on fear and how we can try to contend with it.
Thank you very much, Dan. Appreciate you.